This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Let's do the box office top 10. Lots of emails on assorted topics. Lots on Daniel Day-Lewis's voice, movies with parents, and Jumper as well. Anyway, we'll do the top 10, Jumper, otherwise we'll get distracted.
Have people seen Jumper already? Was it previewed? I mean, I've seen it, obviously.
We'll get there in a moment, okay. I think. Right. So Jumper, one of the movies. We're looking at Bucket List, All the Boys Love Mandy Lane. All the ones we'll promise. 10. 10 is Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Which, you know, I would be lying if I said I didn't laugh a good few times. And James King would also be lying if he said he didn't laugh a good few times.
And Ken Branagh and Michael Caine. Afternoon to them as well, because
they
get disappointed and grumpy if we don't.
They do. And can I say to Kenneth Branagh, I'm so looking forward to going to the premiere in Gossinan of Alien Love Triangle. That's just going to be so exciting.
Why?
Because you haven't read the piece that I wrote. So there's this film, Alien Love Triangle, The Missing Danny.
I read an article from you. I feel as though I have plenty.
Exactly. The Missing Danny Boyle film, which has which I have helped uncover from the vaults.
No Country for Old Men at 9.
I just think it's great. And, you know, I think it is their best work since Fargo, and it's right back to the standard of Blood Simple. There's been a long-running debate on this programme about whether or not the end is a disappointment. And as I said, in fact, I think Roger Deakins said, he said the last 20 minutes of the film was the film. And that is
the cinematographer who we had on earlier in the week.
The great cinematographer, yeah. And I agree with him entirely. And I've come to a conclusion about this, which is if you didn't think it was perfect, go back and see it again.
And keep on seeing it until you realise that you're wrong.
And I have to tell you something about somebody who stopped me, and they said, you remember we talked last week about the right conditions to see There Will Be Blood in?
Yes, which, if in case you missed it last week, Mark suggested that you buy a whole number of seats, the one in front of you, the one to the left, one to the right, and the one behind you. You sit in the middle of the cinema because anything else would be an irritation.
Yeah, and this guy came up to me and he said, I just want to add something to your list of things for the perfect environment of seeing There Will Be Blood. He said, I went to see There Will Be Blood. I came out and Camden was on fire. And he said, and it really made the movie. It was like it spilled out. Obviously, that's not going to be possible for everyone, but he said that he had felt that having had that experience, there was no bigger way of seeing it.
Penelope's at number 8,
which I didn't like at all, but I have to tell you that the young girls I know have gone to see it do think it's much cuter than I do.
Over Her Dead Body at 7.
It's Eva, what's her name, out of Desperate Housewives, which I've never seen, and she's a bride and then she's not, and then she's a ghost and she's trying to stop her. And if you think you've heard this story before, it's Ghost but without the laughs and the invention and the charm and the wit.
Definitely Maybe at 6.
And I Definitely Maybe isn't this year's Annie Hall. I still don't understand why somebody thought it was this year's Annie Hall, other than the fact that at one point there's a musical montage with a series of sort of flashbacks which rips off a very famous scene from Annie Hall. Actually, at the very, very end, when Diane Keaton sings... Oh, God, you remember that? When Diane Keaton is singing Seems Like Old Times. And there's this series of... Have you seen Annie Hall?
Yeah, many years ago.
Yeah, well, Annie Hall is just... I mean, it is one of Woody Allen's best friends. It's absolutely heartbreaking. There's a scene at the very end when he bumps into Annie Hall on the street, having broken up with her, and they go for a coffee, and he just remembers all the things they did together, and you hear the sound of Diane Keaton singing Seems Like Old Times, and it's absolutely heartbreaking.
The Water Horse at 5.
Which, I mean, it's nonsense, but I liked it. I mean, one of the things I liked about it is that, the special effects are done by Weta Digital, who are the people from New Zealand who do all the, you know, the King Kong and the Lord of the Rings and all the Peter Jackson movies. And, I mean, it's a stupid movie about the Loch Ness Monster, but it's a lot less stupid than Loch Ness with Ted Danson. You remember that when Ted Danson discovers a family of Loch Ness monsters all living in a cave, and he looks at the Loch Ness monsters and they look at him, and it's hard to tell who is the most scared. But the only thing with The Water Horse is the whole film is in the trailer. I mean, it's literally the trailer does from the finding of the egg to the birth of the thing to the thing living in the toilet to be put in the lock. And the only thing the trailer doesn't include is anything of David Morrissey.
Hello, David. Oh, we've said hello to him.
We have, but just again.
He's not in it at all.
Well, I don't remember him being in the trailer, because when you see the film, suddenly the British Army are in it. Because the trailer is all just, it's like Brigadoon. Oh, hi, hoots away, the new, let's have some haggis. And the guy, the lead actor in the film.
Just a word of advice, I wouldn't carry on that.
Could I just say, the cast in the film are not Scottish.
Right.
Okay, so what I'm doing is doing a version of people who... I mean, there's you know, your woman, Emily Thingybob, Emily Watson, who does, you know, Breaking the Waves. Oh, Bess McNeil. Oh, God is watching you, Bess McNeil. But the rest of it is very, very like Brit. And the guy, the main kid, is a very good actor. He literally has to say jings all the time. Crivens. But jings is the main thing he has to say.
Actually, it's the man responsible for Donna Wears Your Trousers. I have no position to lecture. Sweeney Todd at four.
Which I like. I was hilariously entertained, I know I said this before, by the fact that some people have apparently complained to the Advertising Standards Council, Commission.
Authority.
That Sweeney Todd is a musical, because apparently the trailers don't tell you that it's a musical. They just say, he was a man in a world of knives. He was a man with a knife. And then it's, you know, Johnny Depp, and from the man he brought you this, that, and the other. And at no point do you have anyone going, oh, I'm singing in the rain like a... And people have literally been going to watch it and going, hang on a minute.
It's a musical.
It's a musical. Well, I didn't pay to see a musical.
It should have its own certificate.
18M. Contains scenes of intense singing.
Cloverfield's at three.
You know, which big, dumb, in a sort of strangely small, homegrown kind of way. I did like it. There are things majorly wrong with it. It's very hard to think of another 84-minute film in which the 20 minutes at the beginning seemed like padding. But you do need the 20 minutes at the beginning, which you have to meet the most irritating people on Earth, so that when the huge, great, big beast, which I can't tell you what it is, although if you've seen Godzilla or you've seen The Host or any of those movies, you have a pretty good idea what it is.
I had an argument with my son about that. He said, it's a bug. I said, no, it's a beast, monster. He said,
bug?
A bug. It's got a flappy thing on its head, which makes it a bug.
Pardon me?
It's got a flappy thing on its head, which makes it a bug.
Saying it all over again. That's great teaching, isn't it? No, but why does having a flappy thing on its head mean it's a bug?
Because it does. If you've got a flappy thing in your neck, right, which goes like that, splur, it makes you a bug.
Is this what they're teaching children at school nowadays?
Man from Atlantis.
Okay, fine. But did he like the film?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Very good. And enjoyed the first 20 minutes, which makes him a young person.
Yeah, exactly.
Juno's at two.
I found those people really annoying. Juno, you see young people I don't find annoying. Ellen Page is absolutely fantastic. Great script. Terrific to see Diablo Cody winning the BAFTA for Best Screenplay the other day. You know, fantastic to see somebody with a huge tattoo get up and receive it. Obviously, she was quite bowled over by it. And I like it very much. And I think Ellen Page is really good. But I would encourage anybody who's seen and liked Juno to get Hard Candy on DVD. You haven't seen it. You can't.
Only after you described it in great detail.
It's leg-crossing fun.
Exactly. The UK's number one is National Treasure, Book of Secrets.
Yeah, and the key word there is colon, isn't it? I mean, look, here's the thing. There's an Indiana Jones movie coming round the corner, right? It's a coming. It's going to be a few months' time. You know what? Just hang on to your money. Because if you want this sort of tomb raiding stuff, you don't want Nick Cage. You don't want directed by that guy who's famous, John Turteltaub, whose most famous thing up until now was Cool Runnings. You want the Steven Spielberg movie. Now, I have no idea what the Steven Spielberg movie is going to be like, but I guarantee you it's going to be better than National Treasure Book of Secrets.
And presumably the absence of There Will Be Blood.
It'll be to do with the fact that it's...
Because we reviewed it last week. Mm. But it was only on in a few selected.
I presume so. Yeah,
it's nowhere.
No, it'll be a platform release, and then it will open. As we were saying when Daniel Batzek was on here, that used to be the way it worked for any. I mean, here's an interesting point. Did you know that Clockwork Orange was square-walled into the West End for a year, a whole year? If you wanted to see Clockwork Orange, you had to go to the West End.
Andrew Frost in Pearl Beach in Australia. Thanks for the advance warning on Daniel Day-Lewis's John Huston-alike accent in There Will Be Blood, which we were talking about last week.
Chinatown, very good.
It's good to get that sort of information in advance of seeing a film. I wish someone had advised me that Lewis was going to do a vocal impersonation of the Vic Reeves Kinky John character in Gangs of New York. I couldn't concentrate on the movie and kept giggling every time Lewis spoke. My wife asked me what was so funny, and when I told her, she couldn't stop laughing either. This time, it seems like it'll be easier to take. And on the same subject... James says, Simon and Mark, I've just listened to the podcast from last week's review of There Will Be Blood, because unfortunately didn't catch it on Friday. Wanted to say that further to your conversation on Daniel Day-Lewis's voice, I read that P.T. Anderson sent him a copy of John Huston's The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, and also recordings from the late 19th century of people speaking. This would seem to tie in with your theory that he sounds like John Huston in Chinatown.
Well, that's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant. And that shows that, because wasn't it you who came up with the Chinatown comparison?
Probably a listener.
So that shows great insight and, you know, learning on your part.
Just because I was
taught you well, my son.
No, you've taught the audience well. Yeah. Well, we've been wittering away for a long time. Not a single review has passed your lips. So
I just did 10. This is so classic, right? No, this is like, how come you haven't done the washing up? Third party. Did I just do 10 movies?
That's not third party. That's Justine Green.
Yes,
she's not me, first party. She's not you, second party. That makes her third party.
She called her Justine.
No, I was meant as in... You see, did I just do 10 reviews?
You did.
Thank you very much. Your Honour, your witness.
What I meant was, we haven't done anything new. We've just done stuff
old. We want something new.
What?
Hold on.
Okay.
Exactly. Third party says, hold on. And I trust that you will. Adrian and Karen on this saying, Simon and Mark, my girlfriend, a Canuck, and I, an expat, listen to your show every week, always in the car. Things in Canada are far apart. At Christmas, we decided to save the shows up for a month of December and listen to them on the six-hour drive to the frozen north to see her parents.
Blimey, that's a long journey.
We loved it. It made the time fly by. In fact, we enjoyed it so much we haven't listened since the Christmas special in anticipation of our road trip to the States today. And we're both especially looking forward to the Jason Isaacs show. It was particularly hard not to break the pact and listen to that one when broadcast. We would love it if you could say hello to us as we listen every week, but not in a scary Michael Caine kind of way. So Adrian and Karen on the long road trip back to the States. Hello.
Hello, Adrian.
Although we
Karen.
Agree with the good doctor about almost every film, we do mention that he is wrong about at least one thing. The answer is definitely Joy Division.
Ah, I see, fine.
We ought to do a review or two.
Yes, we should do. So shall we do the bucket list?
Go on.
So, The Bucket List, directed by Rob Reiner, who's given us some great things in the past, I mean, not least of all being This Is Spinal Tap, starring Morgan Freeman, who's given us some great things in the past, not least of which is Shawshank Redemption, and Jack Nicholson, who's given us some great things in the past, you know, list too long to mention. So the story is two guys. One of them is cantankerous, wealthy, and single. The other one is not cantankerous, not wealthy, and not single, but they are both terminal. And they end up together in a hospital room together due to the most unbelievable plot machinations that get the really, really rich guy to have to share a hospital room with somebody else because he runs hospitals and insists that nobody doesn't get to share a room. So when he gets ill, he has to share a room with one of his. Honestly, it's like crank. And we don't care. Just get them in the room together, okay? Doesn't matter how you do it. Just glue them together. So they're together. They're both terminal. Morgan is getting together a bucket list. This is a list of things he wants to do before he
kicks the.
Oi, well done. And Jack Nicholson says, oh, let me have a look at the list. And then Jack Nicholson decides that there's other things they should add. And together, they should go out into the world to fulfill their bucket list, which includes things like climbing mountains, staying in swanky hotels, skydiving at one point, and in this particular scene, getting tattoos.
So, you decided?
No, I couldn't think of anything I wanted to be stuck with permanently.
What's permanently? I'm going to be dead in 5 minutes.
What?
Figure of speech. So, no Confederate flag, no black Jesus.
Nah, I'm going to...
Pass, yeah, sure.
Well, I never agreed to desecrate my body.
What, are you worried they won't bury you in a Jewish cemetery?
What, the wife?
It's a tattoo. It's not like you're dumping her for another woman.
I never been with another woman.
Whoa. That's got to be on the list.
No. I don't think so.
66 years?
You started laughing in the middle.
Well,
of
it's Jack Nicholson, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, but that,
the way he delivers those lines.
It's got to be on the list. No, it was a terrible Jack Nicholson, but can you do it better?
Nope.
Okay, fine.
I don't even try, though.
Well, look. You see, the thing is, right, there's a very thin line between, you know, kick
love
the
and
bucket.
Hate.
No, yeah, there is a thin line between love and hate. Who was it who pointed that out? The Pretenders, was it? Chrissy Hynde. I met Chrissy Hynde once in a cinema foyer. And
red herring alert.
Yeah, it was. Sorry. Anyway, she was lovely and a vegetarian. And there is a thin line between kicking the bucket and passing the bucket. And, you know, you go in there with Rob Reiner. You think, Rob Reiner, he's edgy, he's sharp, he's funny, he's smart. And very quickly you realise, no, he's not going to do any of those things. He's going to do the... See, my thing with life-affirming movies is that most life-affirming movies cause me to lose the will to live. And in this, it's just so... cozy. I mean, Morgan Freeman is just doing the Morgan Freeman thing, you know, because ever since Shawshank, and then he played the American president, and then he played God, and he's got this reputation now as the everyman that it's okay to like. I mean, it's like if the world was coming to an end, the person you'd want to tell you it was happening is Morgan Freeman. I mean, that's why he does the voiceover in March of the Penguins, is him, right? And then on the other side, Jack, you know, he's the lad, he's the man, he's Jack, yeah, he's in the front row of the Oscars, even when he's got the bald head shape because he was making this film, and he's the thing, and he's a man, he's doing it, but he's got a heart of gold. Exactly, in fact, like the character that he's doing in, you know, As Good As It Gets and all the rest of it. He gets to do a lot of grinning and a lot of leaning back, and Morgan Freeman gets to do a lot of narrating, because Morgan Freeman, just, that's what you get him for now.
Top narrator.
I mean, he and Stephen Fry could probably have fisticuffs over who
narrator of the year.
Narrator of the year. And you know, and so you're sitting there going, and the wishes start to be things like, you know, kissing the most beautiful girl in the world, and they do, but it's not what you think, but it is what you think, really. And you know, an act of kindness for a perfect stranger, and again, it's not what you think, but it is what you think, really. And they both discovered when they were alive, they didn't know they were, only when they were, you know. And it's so, on the one hand, you've got a film like Diving Bell and the Butterfly, which really does do that thing brilliantly about, you know, when the guy is fit and healthy, he doesn't know he's alive, but now he's paralyzed, he's staring through one eye, and suddenly it's this vibrant, wonderful, fantastic thing that really connects with the spirit and has something to say. And on the other hand, you've got The Bucket List, which is just that pat, they're ill, but they're ill in that Hollywood sense, that they're not really ill. You never really believe either of them are really ill. You just believe that they're just two crotchety old guys hanging out with each other. And at the end of the day, shoot, they probably go to the, you know, to the thing, and the shallow Mormon, hey, we did a good day's filming today, didn't we? And Rob Reiner knows better than this. Nobody makes Spinal Tap. Nobody directs the scene with Nigel Tufnell going, you know, how much more black could it be? None more black. You know, it's such a thin line between clever and stupid. Nobody directs that stuff and then looks at The Bucket List and thinks that's up to snuff. Snuff, pun not intended, but actually having said it now, pun intended. And it's just, and you end up just going, come on, how terminal are you? I've been here 2 hours, you know, please.
And are you trying to say hurry up and die?
Sadly, Simon, you know, and that is what you end up thinking.
On the subject of things that Rob Reiner might have done better, Steve, on this email, my wife and I are parents of a 2-year-old and a 3-month-old, so our trips to the cinema are restricted to once or twice a year, usually the annual Pixar film or whatever is showing in November, around my wife's birthday. It was the Bourne Ultimatum this year.
Oh, really?
After hearing the good doctor's review of Enchanted, we were very keen to see it, and being unable to get a pass to our local multiplex, we ordered it on DVD. However, being an impatient person, I couldn't wait that long. And remembering Mark's comments that it's not as good as The Princess Bride. Rob Reiner, but then what is?
Yeah.
I also ordered the 20th anniversary edition of that on DVD. I didn't know that was.
No, me neither. That's one of your favourite films ever.
It is fantastic. Yeah. Having never seen the film before, I was unsure what to expect and seemed to share the reservations of the sick boy in the film being told the story. However,
this is not a kissing story, is it?
After watching it last night, could there be a better Valentine night film choice? No. Just a wonderful and magical film. So thank you for your recommendation. Jason Isaacs was correct. Your reviews of family films are usually spot on. Don't think the last two Pixar films deserved the hard ride you gave them, though, but as a Pixar film fanboy, that might just be me.
Ratatouille, anyway. Up for best screenplay. Excuse me. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father.
Prepare to die. So we've done The Bucket List. What else is new?
River Queen, although it's not actually that new. This is the troubled, in inverted commas, latest from Vincent Ward. I mean, as if there was ever a film from Vincent Ward that wasn't troubled. He's a very, very interesting visionary filmmaker. He made his name with The Navigator, sealed his reputation with Map of the Human Heart, which is a wonderful film, but never looked like it was quite the final cut. And he was always one of these people, he aims very, very high, and then he sort of spends a lot of time fiddling around with it. And the thing that he's probably most famous for in the popular circles is that he wrote the original script for Alien 3. He was the guy who came up with the wood planet, you know, Name of the Rose in space with everyone on a wooden planet. It was the most unbelievable script, absolutely wonderful, and he was going to direct it. And then, when it came to it, everyone went, this isn't going to work. How? Why? It's not going to happen. And of course, he ended up getting shunted off that project, and then it ended up being the David Fincher film, although I think his name is still credited as original story by Vincent Ward. But the Alien 3 that we got is nothing like the Vincent Ward story, which is demons and God and angels and wood planet, and as I said, Name of the Rose in space. I mean, bring it on. And then he did What Dreams May Come, which was premiered in Cannes, and it was, remember, Robin Williams was there in Cannes.
Your favourite actor?
Well, at that point, I didn't have that much of a problem with him, because he'd done things like The Fisher King, and he had these great big... What Dreams May Come is set in heaven, right? Vincent Ward aiming low, as always. Let's set a film in heaven. It was all CG sets, computer graphic sets, and Robin Williams was walking around holding these CG boards to demonstrate what the film was going to look like. It's great. It's a brilliant idea. Vincent Ward making a film set in heaven. Then the film comes out, and you go, oh yeah, yeah, no, that doesn't work, does it? It's, you know, it's, sorry, it's Robin Williams and a bunch of CG visuals, and duh, should have seen that coming. So now River Queen, and River Queen's been around for a long time, and the story that everyone said when they read the script, as they always do with Vincent Ward scripts, it's, the script is absolutely brilliant. The story is set in the 1860s. Samantha Morton is Sarah O'Brien, who's an Irish woman working, living with the British Army in New Zealand, who are sort of in the process of taking the land away from the Maoris. Her character has a child which is fathered by a Maori. That he then dies. She's then bringing up her child. The child is then kidnapped by the Maoris and disappears, and she spends the rest of the movie wanting to go and get the child back, and her allegiances are split between, on the one side, the place where she's come from, on the other side, the place, you know, the indigenous population. And it's all about divided loyalties, and it's a very interesting story, because apparently there were Maoris who worked on both sides, so you'd have, you couldn't tell who was on which side, and, you know, everyone's allegiance is all very, very complicated, very confusing. And I like all Vincent Ward stuff, really, you know, poetic and beautifully shot. And then the stories start coming in. I mean, originally there's this fuss about, somebody says Gary Oldman wouldn't read the script because there's not enough money, and he's getting slagged off by somebody in the production because he wouldn't even read the script, when in fact the script was absolutely brilliant. Then in October 2004, it was reported that Vincent Ward had been removed from the film, and the official quote was, it said that, well, the producers said through very tight lips, "We are happy to confirm the continuing support of our investors and most grateful to our cast and crew for their ongoing commitment to the film," which then carried on under the cinematographer. And then, according to the legend, later on Vincent Ward came back on and then spent months standing up to his waist in the River Thames filming the opening sequence, which is pages of a diary underwater. And then the film finally comes out. I mean, this is like over 2 years later. And like all of Vincent Ward's stuff, there's stuff in it that's wonderful. There's stuff in it that's beautiful and breathtaking. I mean, he is a true visionary. And yet, it looks like it's botched together with a bunch of bits. You know, it's like, I tell you what it's like with his films. It's like looking through a kaleidoscope. And on the other side of the kaleidoscope, there's a picture of immense beauty. And if you could just see it properly, you know it would be something wonderful. But it hasn't, it's been fractured and broken and damaged. I mean, he's the master of the flawed masterpiece. And it's, this is nothing like as accomplished as Map of the Human Heart, but it has Samantha Morton in it. And I really like Samantha Morton. I mean, I find her just a magnetic presence. And she, boy, she gives it her all. I mean, you know, she's really in there and in the scenery and in the landscape, and she's up to her knees in mud, and she's, everything's turned up to her, and she's really going for it. And the story is complicated and interesting, and the scenery is fabulous, and why doesn't it work? Because it looks like, it's like some kind of huge, great, big, unwieldy beast that's tripped and fallen over and broken a couple of its knees and then got up and is sort of staggering onwards. And you can see somewhere in there, there was a great film. And this isn't it. But that doesn't mean don't go and see it, because at least there's evidence of something through there.
I suspect you're going to say that's movie of the week. See, I know we're 8 minutes away from that moment.
Do you?
Yes.
Okay, fine. So,
but I can tell from your body language about what's coming next. I can anticipate
Jumper,
which is indeed much advertised, lots of posters.
Make the joke that you made when I said to you we're going to do Jumper, and you said
Cardigan.
That's right, because Anakin Skywalker starring in, no, and it's also the thing that everyone has made. So, you know, there we go. So this, not as in Jumpers for Golfers, but as in jumping, as in jaunting. You're about the same age as me, right? Do you remember the Tomorrow People?
Yes, vaguely. Okay, yes, so I do. Sort of science fiction-y thing.
Yes, yeah, science fiction-y story where people who discover they have the ability to jaunt, right? They put their hands on their belts and they go, jump, and they go,
that's
somewhere
mud,
else.
Isn't it? In Tiger Feet.
Yeah, it's exactly. They look, they're about to do the mud Tiger Feet dance, but then they go somewhere else. So Hayden Christensen, he of Anakin Skywalker, and later of character who wasn't Bob Dylan, but was called Dib Bobden in that movie Factory Girl, he discovers he can jump or jaunt. So he spends a little bit of time jumping and jaunting into banks and, you know, robbing all the stuff that he wants, and then going around sightseeing and, you know, carousing with women, and he thinks everything's fine. But then he discovers that he's actually being trailed by a scary-haired Samuel Jackson, whose hair is completely white, except for his beard, which isn't completely white. Never explain why. And he's not the only one. Jamie Bell is also a Tomorrow People-like jaunting jumper.
Yeah, I wouldn't open that door if I were you. Not if I wanted my girlfriend to keep breathing, I wouldn't. But that's just me. What are you going to do anyway? You're going to bring her down and have a nice little romantic picnic? Nice little tea party? Is that what you think is going to happen?
You so much as look at her.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're going to jump me where? Did you think you were the only one? You really have no idea, do you? You lead the life you live. You think you can just go on a little Roman holiday and they wouldn't notice? Just jump all over the place. Jump, 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 jump. And nothing's going to happen? But they've noticed.
That kind of...
That's it.
That's the jumping.
And that's almost exactly the same sound that it was in The Tomorrow People. That's what happened. They went zoom. I love The Tomorrow People. It was absolutely... I used to love Time Slip as well. And really, this hasn't moved on at all since then. I mean, they've got millions more dollars and loads more CGI visuals. But it's directed by Doug Liman, who, you know, did Swingers and then famously did the first Bourne film, which isn't as good as the next two, because the next two were done by Paul Greengrass. And I think, actually, that must be quite annoying to be the person that started the series that then wasn't. I mean, it's kind of like being the Christopher Columbus of the Harry Potter movies, isn't it? The thing that you're remembered for is not doing as well as the people that came
But remember, we learned from Jason Isaacs that your assessment of Chris Columbus is wrong, and that he is not a bean counter.
Yep. Like Jason very much, but, you know, I'm the critic, he's the actor, and of course he's the better looking of the two of us. So, many questions, right? And again, why is Samuel Jackson's hair white when his beard isn't white? I mean, is it like he contractually agreed to have the beard done but not the hair? Don't understand that. Secondly, why is Hayden Christensen employed? I mean, really, Hayden Christensen in the original Star Wars sequels, prequels, you know, and he's Anakin, and the whole thing is that he goes through these two movies, he's Anakin, and then he's going to turn into Darth Vader, right? And which is, you know, decrepitude, awful, moral torpor, and then Anakin Skywalker, see, look, just a bit cross. I mean, he really has only two things he does. He squints, he pouts, and occasionally he bursts into what I think he thinks is a really winning smile. But to me, it's one of those absolutely cheese-eating grins. He's going to stop doing that. I mean, he makes Richard Gere look like the most versatile actor in the world. Richard Gere and his blinking performances just leave Hayden Christensen so far behind. Plus, when you put Hayden Christensen in a movie with Sienna Miller, right? Sienna Miller looks quite good. Because, you know, she's up against Hayden as Dib Bobden, and she looks like she's... When you put him in a movie with Jamie Bell, who actually can act, I mean, no fixed accent in this film, but he can act. And you go, oh, hang on, right, so that's somebody who can act, and that's Hayden Christensen. And it's a 12 certificate, which is a shame, because really it ought to be a PG, because it's absolutely, you know, if you're 12, if you're old enough, you're just going to think, there are holes that you can drive a bus through in this. For the record, the BBFC information is 12A for one use of strong language and moderate violence. And an undetailed stabbing by the arch-villain in the film, but beautifully, one mildly sensual love scene without anything sexual in it.
That's interesting. And a thought suddenly occurs.
Go on.
So one of the weekend papers gave away a copy of Gregory's Girl.
Oh, yeah.
Right, which you sat down and watched.
Jumpers for Goalposts.
Great. Fantastic film. So I know I'm off at a tangent. I've jumped through here. A secret. You remember the first 30 seconds? It's a nurse taking her clothes off. And they're all ogling, and they're going, ooh.
Okay, well, you're like Yoda.
It's from another film. It doesn't fit at all. It's almost like, well, look, we've got to have someone taking their clothes off, so we better put it right at the very beginning.
I don't
doesn't
remember.
Doesn't fit the rest of it at all.
I don't remember. Are you sure that you didn't get a VHS that somebody had recorded, you know?
VHS.
Mandy Miller Night Nurse over whatever it was.
It was a DVD free with the paper.
Yeah, well, you know, I rest my case.
John in Manchester on the subject of Jumper.
Oh, yes, fine. So people
have
seen it, right?
First time mailer to your show. Normally, I'm quite happy to sit back and listen to the podcast. I've found the Doctor to be spot on with his reviews, or at least I've always agreed with him. However, I find myself in a position of seeing a movie before hearing the review.
Yep.
Jumper had the misfortune of sitting through last night. Fun. What a mess.
No, what a mess.
After seeing the dizzying jumping effect one or two times, I was ready to get on with the plot. Unfortunately, I had to endure another 85 minutes of the, by now quite nauseating,
jumping
effect, while still waiting for the plot to start. I left the film with three questions at the forefront of my head. One, since when did a movie assume the need for a sequel to justify its own lack of plot?
Yes.
Two, how are fine actors like Diane Lane, Anna, Sophia Robb and Kirsten Stewart, the latter having one word and 30 seconds of screen time, sucked into such a mess of a film? And
Diane Lane is fabulous and hopefully it bought her a house.
And three, how can I get my money back?
You can't unless you go and get Diane Lane's house back off her. We've got time quickly for
we've
all the
got
boys
two
like
minutes. Go on, squeeze
another
it
odd one. This it's a horror movie. It's been around for a while. It was at Sitges in 2006 and was picked up by then Miramax. It's now the Weinstein Company. It's a feature film debut, I think, with Jonathan Levine, who subsequently made a movie called The Wackness with Sir Ben Kingsley. And basically, it's like a Dumbo teenage slasher high school movie filmed by Gus Van Sant. So it has this really sort of strange offbeat sensibility with with, you know, the kind of floating lens focus and really navel-gazing, noodly indie music, and, you know, everything is a little bit kind of, you know, and a little bit nihilistic. But then, in the end, it is a story about a bunch of high school people, and there's a sort of the unattainable virginal queen, and then something terrible happens, and then we go forward to something in the future, and they all decide to go to a ranch for their weekend, and they're all doing stuff, you know, snogging and smoking, and then people start to die, and then you don't care very much about them, and then people go out into the dark to do more snogging, and then more people start to die, and then there's a twist. Now, if you've ever read Men, Women and Chainsaws by Carol Clover, which I'm sure you have.
Why would I read that?
Because it's just wonderful. Have you not read Men, Women and Chainsaws?
You gathered that.
Yeah, no, but it is a really fabulous book. It's terrific.
Keep it for my birthday.
Fine, okay, for your birthday, fine. You know anything about The Final Girl or any of those things, any of those horrors, then you already know where the movie's going. If you don't, there was a lovely review in Variety, which was, I think, really nailed it, and it said, I mean, I didn't say this, I would love to have said this, it said it was partly dumb, but it was partly smart, but mostly dumb. And that's exactly what it is. It's like, it's a strange, cheesy, sleazy, leery horror movie with these kind of odd, you know, art house affectations and some strange lyrical moments. But then it gets back to the fact that it's about people running around, you know, and teenagers in their nightdresses. So right. If you've seen Happy Birthday to Me or, you know, My Bloody Valentine, you know where this is going.
So of an uninspiring list,
Have a bucket list.
River Queen, Jumper and All the Boys Love Mandy Lane. You're not going to go for All the Boys Love Mandy Lane,
nope.
Are you? It's going to be River Queen then.
Yeah, you were right the first
time. Even though it's a kaleidoscope.
Even though it's all over the shop. Even though it's all over the shop, River Queen.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.